Welcome to the Intentional Wellbeing Podcast. Our guest today is Salila Sukumaran. She is an Ayurvedic health coach based in San Francisco Bay Area. Through her wellness and travel concierge, Ayurgara Maya, Salila provides a tailored Ayurvedic and yoga wellness journeys to India and Bali for an immersive experience. For her work in promoting yoga and Ayurveda, Salila was recognized as the ambassador of Ayush, India's health ministry. Salila has appeared on the London Real TV, is quoted in the Washington Post, Mind Body Green, Authority Magazine, and Money Magazine, among others. Salila is an Ayurvedic lineage from Kerala, South India, and shares her knowledge through Ayurveda workshops and webinars. Salila learned Ayurveda from her elders of her family and enjoys demonstrating how simple rituals can bring profound shifts in overall health. A big thank you to Salila, and a big thank you for all of you for me struggling through my pronunciations. I hope it got it right. So come and enjoy a conversation about Ayurveda, cultural appropriation, the difference and the sciences between Ayurveda and yoga, and how Ayurveda connects us to our roots, our heritage, and our ancestry. Hello, welcome to the Intentional Wellbeing Podcast. I'm your host, Diane Bondi. This is the podcast where we talk about well-being and how well-being influences our everyday health, our outlooks on life, and how collective well-being can have a positive impact on the world. And today, I have the absolute honor of talking to Ayurvedic practitioner, Instagram influencer, all the wonderful things. Look, she made a face when I say that. I think nobody really wants to be an Instagram influencer in the way that we picture Instagram influencers. Am I right? Salila, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here. I've enjoyed your work on Instagram, which is how I kind of found you. And how we came into a deeper conversation was around a post I made about cultural appropriation, claiming designations that don't belong to you. So in a sense, calling yourself a yogini or a yogi without knowing the whole history and the importance of that title, calling yourself any kind of, I guess, designation or any kind of guru, if you will, without knowing all the things, or sage, without knowing all this, that this is a very important designation. And I posted about that. And it was interesting because it created a really wonderful dialogue in which I want to say you invested quite a bit of time, which I was grateful for, because I always want to give deference to, highlight, and default to South Asian creators, South Asian teachers, because this is your culture that has been highly appropriated by everyone. Not just, you know, when we think of appropriation, we often just think of white folks, but people of color can also appropriate things. So this is something that has been very appropriated. And I wanted to talk to you because you are an Ayurvedic practitioner. And that's something I've seen that's been highly appropriated as well, and that people don't fully understand the depth of the science of Ayurveda. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Diane. So warm and welcoming. I am honored to be here and to share my thoughts about this. I may not be right about everything, but I will do my best to be kind and gracious and share what I know so we can all move forward in the path of learning.
Absolutely. And what I loved about what you just said is that we're all learning, right? And many people have different perspectives. So it's really important that we acknowledge that no one culture or no one race of people is a monolith. So many people of South Asian descent are going to have ideas and thoughts and different cultures and different approaches to things. So it's not one person's interpretation. It's a lineage or many people's interpretation. So I say that as much as well as a Black culture, we are not a monolith. So not all of us agree on all things, right? So we just share what we've learned and we share what we know.
Right.
So tell me about your path to Ayurveda. Like, how did you come to embrace it into your life?
So I was born into a lineage. My grandmother, grandfathers, great-grandparents were all Ayurveda Vaidyas. So my family comes from two streams. One is the martial stream. They practiced Kalaripayattu, which is the oldest martial arts form in the world, from where the Shaolin monks, all that progressed. And then the other stream is the healer stream. So if you're getting hurt, one part of the family is getting hurt. The other part of the family needs to know how to heal the wounds. So my family comes from these two streams. And my great-grandfather was a physician in the royal court. And he had his own academy and he was teaching students. So that knowledge kind of trickles down into the family, into all the women, the children, everybody gets to know a little bit of that. But when I was born into this family, I had no idea this is what it was called. I just called it as something my family did. And whenever I would reveal it to friends at school, everybody would be like, "Oh, weird. And, you know, what is your family doing?" So I would immediately clamp shut. And that did not exist. Because in India, because we were colonized by the British for a very long time, it was not cool to be a very native Indian, traditional Indian kind of person. You had to be cool. You had to look like you were very westernized to be accepted by your peers. When I moved to America, I kind of all that, because you know, this happens in colonized societies, right?
Yes.
Oppressed societies start to align with the oppressor's values to just show that they are different and they are going to be winners in this lifetime. They're not going to be the losers who got oppressed. So when I came to America and I lived as a modern Western person, the consequence of that was that by 2015, I was completely broken down, ill on all levels. Gone through several miscarriages and I did not understand why this was happening to me, even though I was healthy by the Western parameters of health. So I was obese or overweight or none of my markers. My markers were all fine, but I was not able to hold on to a baby. So I returned home to Ayurveda and I did a Panchakarma, which is this Ayurvedic detox therapy. And calling it a detox therapy would be, you know, not quite appropriate, but that's the best word we can come up with. It's like a cleansing of the body on all levels. That was done. Not just was my health restored, I was a completely changed human being. You know, before that, I was having panic attacks. I was slightly getting overweight. And, you know, I'm only 5 feet one, so my frame is small and doesn't carry a lot of weight. But now I'd lost all that. My body was flexible. I was strong. I was smiling. I was in love with life. I was just feeling this surge of energy through all my body channels. And I was like raring to go. I was like, I've got life. I can do life. I'm not afraid. I'm afraid, but I'm not afraid to take the next step. So I was in that state of mind. Once I achieved that, I was like, what is this Ayurveda? And then I started having conversations with my mother, my family members, remembering how it was with my grandparents, then reading books on Ayurveda and talking to the physicians who I had met through this journey, and then reading books. I'm constantly surrounded with Ayurveda books. You know, there's books everywhere. So just, you know, going back and referencing and cross-referencing and saying, oh my God, all of this makes sense now. Where the journey began as a practitioner.
I love that when we're not feeling 100% ourselves, or when we feel like there's something wrong, returning back to our indigenous healing practices, regardless of what culture you are from, can often right the ship, because they were created for a reason. They're created from the places that we come from for a reason. And when we are taught from colonization, white supremacy, white dominance, that these types of indigenous practices are weird or unpopular or not what we do in the West, yet the West will adopt those practices change them slightly, call them something else, and erase the culture behind it. It's always so interesting. But when we go back to it as our native and indigenous culture allows, it makes the biggest difference in our lives and our world. And I'm grateful that you decided, okay, you know what? I need to do a little investigative work here. I need to figure out what's going on here. I need to backtrack a little bit and get back in touch with an ancient science that was created for me. So could you give us an idea of what exactly Ayurveda is? I was taught that it is the sister science of yoga in my 200-hour teacher training. Is that a fair statement?
It is difficult to anthropomorphize, isn't that the term? To put like this human, because then it takes off so much from what it is, right?
Okay, yeah.
Both Ayurveda and yoga come from the Vedas. Ayurveda comes from Atharva Veda. Yoga comes from Rig Veda. These are the two Vedic texts that these two glaciers originate from. You know, these glaciers are feeding the entire world, and just the world isn't aware of it. Mm. This is Bronze Age. This is 1500 BC we are talking about. So these two giant glaciers are coming out from that time, feeding all of humanity. Every human on this planet is touched by this.
By it.
We're not aware of it.
Mm.
So what is Ayurveda? So hard to put that into a few words, you know, but Ayurveda to an Indian person, to me, is a way of life. From the moment I was born, Ayurveda was with me. And when I pass away, my last rites would be Ayurvedic. Every decision I make, the way I think, the way I conduct myself throughout life, the way I approach a crowd and say hello is decided by Ayurvedic principles. So it is that deep in the fabric of who I am.
That is so much bigger than I ever understood, right? I was taught it was healing through food and practices and healthful practices. But the deeper understanding of this glacial analogy is, I have to say, this week has been an incredible week of learning from indigenous healers. Like, I've had this opportunity to tap into so many different ideas of what wellness and healing looks like. And I've always been interested in Ayurveda because in Caribbean culture, there's some things that are similar that I found, like there's some foods that are similar. I think maybe because of our geography is very similar in the Caribbean and in India, we have a similar geography and access to similar foods and fruits and access to some similar practices. Like the dry brushing and the massaging of sesame oil is one of the practices that I learned from my mom, but instead of sesame oil, it was coconut oil that we were rubbing with on our skin. Like there's all these things where when I was taking our Ayurveda course, I'm like, oh, we also do that in Caribbean culture, but we call it this. Like, it's funny how these things, like when you say it touches the world, it really does. Like I had no idea that these principles or these things that we were doing that were indigenous to my culture also was linked to Indian culture.
And because there was such a deep exchange of knowledge in the ancient world, like the Greeks, the Mesopotamians, the Egyptians, everybody was learning from each other. And I don't believe they were so nationalistic, you know. They
were,
and everybody had a way of like slowing off dead skin and applying an oil barrier. So the Romans were using mud and olive oil, and Caribbean, you are also doing dry brushing and using coconut oil. So all cultures were sharing all these tips and techniques. And I'm sure it's Ayurvedic. You can call it Ayurvedic, but because we put Ayurveda in the Indian context, we need to say it is Ayurvedic because we feel like, oh my God, am I taking something from that?
That's culture? Not mine. Yes, that is not mine to own. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's some evidence that we were trading and moving around the planet far before it was, I guess, documented far mm-hmm. before perhaps the Europeans came to conquer the world. Like, we were already traveling and meeting each other and in trades with each other, right? Like, when right. I think about the country of Barbados, which is where I'm from, when you go to the east of Barbados, the next big continent is Africa. So uh-huh. there is nothing between the east coast of Barbados and the continent of Africa. So yeah. we must have been going back and forth Absolutely. There.
Yeah. Spending right. summers there and hanging out.
right? Like, I think, how could we not be kind of, we have a big tree in Barbados that is from Africa, right? There's some feelings about how the country of Barbados was formed. So we have this big national tree that's only, I can't even remember now. I'm having a brain fart. Mm-hmm. I'll link it in the show notes. But it grows in Barbados, but it's from Africa. It's nowhere else in the world. It's yeah. from the continent, but yeah. there's one tree that grows in Barbados. So yeah. how it got there, did a seed float there? Did a piece of land? Like, because we are so close, and I love this idea that Ayurveda, like you said, touches all of us, and that in our own indigenous cultures, we have a lot of things that are the same, which is wonderful. So how do you apply your Ayurveda, or how can we apply Ayurveda to our general well-being? You shared a recipe for stewed apples. I call it stewed apples with me. Mm-hmm. I cook them in the in my Instapot or in my slow cooker. And that was one of the first Ayurvedic recipes I learned. And mm-hmm. that warm apples in the morning, chef's kiss.
So the reason why I made that post is because, you know, when we talk about Ayurveda, then automatically you talked about how stewed apples is how you started to do something Ayurvedic, whereas stewed apples is not even mentioned anywhere in Ayurveda. Mm-hmm. That was an adaptation. The first wave of physicians who came to the West in the 70s did to help Westerners eat something in a more Ayurvedic fashion. So that is a remedy given to somebody who was very insistent on eating apples for breakfast. And the physicians knew that apples are extremely cold. They're going to give you kapha,
right.
more mucus in your body. So then they said, can you give up apples? And they said, no, we can't. We've got to have our apples. And then the physicians said, fine. Then just cook them, add spices to them, add mm-hmm. heat. And it will not be so kapha. And then they were like, woo, apple pie, why not?
Yes, apple strudel, apple sauce, all the things.
yeah. And then it became like apple pie is Ayurvedic breakfast. And now Indians at home are reading all this online yes. and going, oh my God, I've got to have my apple pie for breakfast.
Okay.
People like me speak up and say, guys, don't give up on our traditional breakfast.
Yes.
Adaptation.
I think, wow. So sometimes it's cross-pollinization, sometimes it's appropriation, sometimes it's like, okay, listen, Westerners, if you have to have the apples, let's find a way that you can have the apples, which you know, it's almost like calming a petulant child. Oh, okay. Let's come to a compromise, right?
Exactly.
I love how you share on your Instagram page how you can apply, like how easy it is to apply. Like mm-hmm. Can you take away some of the mysticism for us? Like how people are like, I don't know if this is Ayurvedic. Should I be doing this? Like, what are some of the common practices that you share with the world?
The most common one I would say is Abhyangam, oil mm-hmm. Abhyangam, which is, you mentioned that you learned, you know, slowing up dead skin, applying coconut oil to your body, and your skin just loves it and soaks it up. All human beings need to be oiled. We are so much better when we are oiled.
Agreed.
The word oil translates to sneha, to love. So if we are not feeling love in our life, the easiest way to feel physically love is to apply oil on the body. And oiling the body, letting it soak all that up, and just sitting in the sun is such a loving, nourishing ritual. So that is something I share with almost everybody. Mm-hmm. Even people who are like very middle America, white, and like, no, oil, eel, grease.
Yes, it's going to clog my pores. It's going to do this. It's going to do that.
Yeah, that's one thing. And then the other thing I wanted to quickly just mention was that mm-hmm. I think when we are doing Ayurveda, we should go with what brings us joy. Mm. And we should all connect with what our great grandparents did. Mm-hmm. That is what would feel right for us. So it would feel, if I go for something that an Indian person does, which looks very outlandish, I may do it once or twice. I may force myself to do it, but I may not stick to it. Mm-hmm. But if I've seen my grandma do something, you know, that is going to stick. That is going to nourish. That is going to make me feel her affection pouring down on me. That is going to strengthen my relationship with my ancestors. That is what will be Ayurvedic to me if I do something that my ancestors have done. I am very sure, I'm very confident there are practices that are Ayurvedic within the Western world that probably today's generation has lost touch with. It's a matter of getting back into the flow and realizing, oh yeah, that's Ayurvedic too, and that's what we did.
100%. I remember when my mother was suffering with a lot of arthritis in her hands, so much to the point that her finger would stick in a position and she couldn't straighten it out. Yeah. And I had taught a 200-hour teacher training here in Essex County where I live, and I had an Ayurvedic doctor come in and speak to us about Ayurveda. You know, he did the pulse test and all the things that, you know, make people interested in learning more. Like, he was really good at capturing, you know, people's attention into this, you know, this ancient science. Yeah. And my mother was having so much trouble that I sent her to the Ayurvedic doctor to help her with her arthritis. Yeah. And he prescribed a drink that had black pepper in it. And my mother had a really hard time because the drink isn't something she was used to drinking it. But she is so connected to also our own indigenous practices that she's like, this will be good for me. I need to learn this. And it did help so much with her arthritis. Yeah. Once people were introduced to the idea that there's things around you and there's many ways to heal the body, then they were interested in stepping into Ayurveda. Have you found that to be true for practitioners or people who turn to you for those practices?
People who come to me are those who have tried everything else. And they're now open-minded enough to try something alternative. They're like, okay, let me do this as well. And when they do an Ayurvedic way of living for about 3 to 6 months, I have 19-year-olds who have come and said, oh my God, this was life-changing. I have 16-year-olds. I had a 16-year-old cancer patient who was going through remission. And he was determined. Something about Ayurveda told him that he needed to eat this way. He needed to eat spices. So he came to me with his grandmother and his mother because they wouldn't let him alone. I did a special cooking class for him where I showed him how to cook using spices. And he's out of danger. He's fine. He's doing great. He's back to being a 16-year-old boy. So I think there's a part of him that from his Mexican heritage, he was part Mexican. Mm-hmm. So something about the spices just kept attracting him. So once he made that connection, it was easy for him to follow through.
It's kind of coming back to it's like a full circle moment. It's like coming back to your natural roots. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I took away from the Ayurvedic presentations that I have seen, is that we are so detached from where we come from our ancestral lineage, from what our bodies need, even though we may not be living in our indigenous places, our body still is connected to that space. Okay. And if we can access the things that make us feel well in those spaces and bring them to wherever we are, it can have the biggest impact on our health. It's when we kind of step out of our own indigenous practices that our health begins to suffer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, it's coded in our DNA. What six generations past my ancestors did is firing off my DNAs today.
Yes. I think that connection to our past gets lost. And it's especially as a Black person where you don't 100% know where your DNA comes from or how you're connected to that. It's hard to figure out what you need, but I think this is a nice introduction, if you will, learning those Ayurvedic practices, especially after you said it touches everybody in the world. That has stuck in my brain from that very first comment that you made, that we are connected to that. We have that receptors around that. And perhaps that introduction to that also gives me an introduction to my own traditional healing practices from the continent or from the island of Barbados, those places where we've adapted what our ancestors knew and we brought it to new places to help us become well. And yes, to share that, right? To cross-pollinate.
Yes, and to stabilize and to just go deep and centered into who we are as human beings, like a stake in the ground.
Nice.
And that's what brings health. That is the definition of health in Sanskrit. Swastha, established, centered within yourself, deeply connected to the ancestors, reaching out to the future.
Oh, I love that. That grounded sense. It's kind of, it always reminds me of standing in Tadasana or a mountain pose in yoga, that sense of grounding, that pressing down through your feet, that closing of my eyes, the feeling of the ancestors at my back, the feeling of the ancestors putting their hands on my shoulders, that learning that knowledge and that wisdom, because we're so focused in looking into the future that we forget we have so much to learn from that past, and that past like supports us to move forward. I loved how you said that, you know, the cells, your DNA is impacted and influenced by what your ancestors did many generations ago. That is something to think about, right? Because we're very caught up in our own idea of who we are without any understanding of where we come from.
Yeah, the Western world, the modern world is set up to constantly cut us off from that, right? Every day, this snip, snip, snip. You're an individual. You're locked up here. You need to be doing better, being something else than you are.
Yes.
The ancient way is constantly connection, 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 daily connection.
Do you think we'll ever get past that in the West? Because I'm seeing it ties in very much to what's going on with this global pandemic, this forgetting that we are in relationship with others and that we really like this. I honestly believe it's going to be individualism that will be the end of humanity.
It's a subject I think about, but it depresses me.
I know. It's a heavy subject. Yeah.
I think there is hope as long as there are people like you.
And you.
Your platform to talk and connect, and we'll keep finding new ways to connect, and connection is our biggest motivation. So we will be sending out those tentacles out, feelers looking for each other and forever mourning for each other.
I hope so. This is a difficult time in the world and it feels really heavy, and it's nice to look back and see how we were before. Because I really believe, you know, I did take an undergrad in history. I really do believe that we can't know where we're going if we don't know where we've been. And that in order not to repeat some of the catastrophic mistakes that have impacted humanity, we have to research those things and know how they begin and watch where they begin and unpack them and dismantle them if they're not working for the good of all. And that's one thing I feel about Ayurveda. It's very much an everybody practice, that anybody can tap into it at any point as long as they find the right practitioner.
Yes, which is why our practitioners, our yoga teachers have so generously given this science away, given this love away. You know, if you could imagine the atrocities that India had to go through in the last 1,000 years, you know, slave trading, marching millions of Indians as slaves across this mountain range, which is called the Hindu Kush because so many Hindus died there. So the word Hindu Kush comes from Hindu. Kush means died. So that's how many Hindus had to die. To name that mountain Hindu Kush, and oppression, conversions, torture, killings, prohibition against practicing yoga or Ayurveda. In the 18th century, 1857, when there was the first revolt against the British, yogis were on the forefront of that revolt. And the British would tie yogis to cannons and shoot them into smithereens to prevent them from practicing yoga. So these are the teachers who went underground and then revived yoga, Ayurveda, and now are spreading this knowledge into the world. So if a Western practitioner has some idea of the, you know, the kind of, what is it called, this kind of Spanish Inquisition style torture that went into the destruction of these sciences. And from there, we are bringing it back to life and we are sharing this gift with the world. Then there might be more respect for these sciences.
I hope so, because as you and I talked before we were recording, you're from Northern California, and I had talked to you about going to Berkeley and speaking. I can't even remember the year now. I want to say 2015, but I can't remember exactly, at the Yoga and Race Conference, and talking about, my topic was cultural appropriation. As a Black person, our culture gets appropriated a ton. As a South Asian person, your practices get appropriated a ton. And I think it's really important as practitioners that we know when we are appropriating something and when we are appreciating something. Mm-hmm. When we take something that is not ours to take, and I just want to be clear here, anybody can appropriate something, right? So people of color can also appropriate other people's culture. That when we take something, we change it slightly, we rename it, and we erase its history completely, and we pretend like we invented it or it's ours. Or we see something that we like on somebody else, we think it's pretty, we don't understand the context, we don't understand the history, and we wear it as a caricature or a costume without any deep connection to where these things come from. And an appreciation is when someone like you invites me into a conversation and teaches me about something, and I learn something new from this process, but I honor the teacher. This is not something I created. This is not something I am skilled at. This is not something that I know about. Who I want to default to is those practitioners whose culture this really is, which is why I wanted to talk to you, because I had posted a piece on Instagram around giving yourself designations that don't belong to you, like yogi, like sage, like guru, like those things that have deep historical meaning and deep impactful meanings for people whose culture it is, that we just think sound cool and make us seem more authentic. So we tack it to the end of our names. And you spend a lot of time breaking that down and breaking that apart, and even saying that you do not want to be referenced as an expert in Ayurveda, which from what I see on where you've shared, you are extremely knowledgeable. So why do you not see yourself as an expert? Is it because somebody hasn't bestowed that on you? Or
Ayurveda is an ocean.
Yes.
It's a glacier. It's a glacier. It's an ancient glacier feeding the world. Just to give you an understanding, every classic of Ayurveda, and there were hundreds written, of which there are only a percentage that survives today. Every classic has about 7,000 to 10,000 sutras.
Oh, wow.
You're familiar with Patanjali, so you know Patanjali. So when we say Patanjali's first shloka, Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha, you understand that from those four words, somebody could write a PhD thesis, right?
Totally, yes.
Now, imagine that multiplied into four, because that is just a quarter of a sutra, into four, into 7,000.
I get it. Yes.
And in a language that is Vedic Sanskrit from the Bronze Age. So if somebody is not a PhD in Ayurveda, someone has not done graduate level Sanskrit, cannot be yourself an expert. You cannot be an expert. The experts have died saying, I am just a student, a humble student.
I appreciate that, though. Thank you for clarifying that. It is so broad, because I've only ever had maybe a hair. So if I were to think, I were to think of a thread, and you know how we have many, a thread is wound of many pieces of fabric or cloth or cotton or whatever the thread is, right?
you would have to fray the thread, and that thread would have like 7,000 fibers. And each of those fibers has its own, like has its own conversation, its own, you know, history, its own learning. That puts it into perspective for me, because there's lots of folks running around calling themselves experts.
They do a course and then they call themselves experts.
Put out a shingle, start counseling everybody.
That's appropriation. That's not appreciation. Because you put on a caricature, you've done something to attract attention to you, and mm-hmm. you know doing that, giving yourself an Indian name, and then saying I'm an Ayurveda expert, will go the bank will go ka-ching, 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 because of that, yeah. right?
Yes.
Not because you are doing anything for Indian culture or you are doing anything to preserve Indian culture or the sciences.
And we see that a lot. I have to be honest, prior to the Ayurvedic practitioner who came to teach us, Dr. Sisera, before he came to teach us, the Ayurvedic practitioner and doctor, as they were calling themselves, was a white person who renamed themselves with an Indian name and opened up an organization and was telling us that we all needed to be eating stewed apples for breakfast. So it's good to hear from a practitioner, because we have no idea. I think we've really been misled, or I feel like I've really been misled as to what, prior to Dr. Sisera, about what that is, like what mm-hmm. that means, like how I show up, which is really important to talk to people like you to help us clarify and understand that this is a glacial amount of information and knowledge and history, because it's been distilled down to a couple of things, right? Whenever you talk to somebody about Ayurveda, it's like, okay, what's your dosha?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is a great question. It can be life-changing to know your dosha mm-hmm. and understand that the dosha changes. There is a prakriti, a natural innate dosha, and a vikriti, acquired imbalances through diet and lifestyle and environment. It's great, but then, like you said, it becomes a caricature of the original. It starts to become ossified into these five rules, do these, and five, don't do that. It's not that. It's the ocean. There's freedom there. There's choice there. It's very freeing to be an Ayurvedic practitioner. It's not a set of house rules, do this, don't do that.
Which I think is something that's very Westernized. That's how we're taught. That's how we're trained. That's how we're culturalized. That there's just these lists of things that we need to do, and then we will achieve perfect health if we go to bed at this time. If we eat certain things, which I have feelings about that. If we engage, you know, certain ways, that this, if we follow this list to a T, then we will achieve perfect health. As opposed to embodying a different things, noticing how we feel, noticing how we show up, noticing our language. Like, we don't listen to all of those things. We will buy into a prescription of a couple of things in order to get a fast result, which is never something that is helpful or has lasting effects.
Yeah, and our ego gets very satisfied when we are like, oh, I don't eat onions or garlic, so then I don't have to do the big work of making my relationship all right with my partner or as a better human being, because that takes work. But this little giving up the garlic and the onion I can do, and then I can put this label on myself and say I'm very Ayurvedic, very yogic, and I can just ignore the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
These practices also become crutches that we use to excuse ourselves of the real work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Using these ideas to stop, you know, from doing the real work, I think is really huge, right? That we overlook what needs to be done. Nobody wants to do hard work. Let's be honest.
Nobody
wants to do it because it's hard.
Lazy.
Yeah, like it's just hard. The work of these things are just hard. But there's one thing that always rolls around in my head, and I say it to myself all the time, and I say it to my students and to the people around me who I may be practicing with. I said, we are meant to do hard things. Mm-hmm. We are. Mm-hmm. And the hard things that we have to do now, I don't think are nearly, when I think about this, nearly as hard as some of the things that my ancestors have had to do. They have paved the way for it to make it a little less stressful. They paved a way to make it a little bit more easeful for me. So if I can start looking at that, then I'm like, I can do this because it's not nearly as hard as what has come before me. And if I do this hard work, I make it even less hard mm-hmm. for the generation that comes ahead of me. If I start to do this work, if I move through this work, if I use the tools that are given to me, the same way I look at yoga. Yoga is a set of tools mm-hmm. to live your best life. Through connection, mm-hmm. not just me as this individualistic sensory practice that's all about me. No. It's about how I show up in the world for others. And part of that is how I take care of myself. And that's how I see Ayurveda.
Yes.
You know, interlaced in all of these things, interwoven in all of these sciences, like this almost this huge umbrella of well-being, if you will.
Yes. Yes.
Of being intentional with your well-being.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And when you say it's, you are doing the hard work. Your love is guiding you to do that hard work. And when love is guiding you to do hard work, even if my face is smashed in, I'm smiling.
Yes.
You know, yes. every day, people like you and I would count myself as well, that mm-hmm. we are working hard because we are following our dharma.
Yes.
Once the dharma is clear, the hard work is a joy.
Yes. And you feel, even if you get through to like one person or one person has a moment where they understand, it doesn't matter how long you've been doing this or how many people you talk to, but that one person gets that spark and they understand, like the 16-year-old who is recovering from his journey with cancer, the spark and the knowing and the connection to the spices, because again, in Mexican culture, there's a lot of similar spices as there are in Caribbean culture, because Mexican culture is Caribbean. Yeah. And then, you know, with Indian culture, there's a lot of similarities because the geography is very similar. We have access to the same kinds of foods. We may prepare them differently, but yes. we have access to the same types of things. Yeah. And it just lends us to believe that our cultures are more similar than they are different.
Totally, totally. It's like you take the exact same five instruments and you have a completely different orchestra.
It's true. It's true, right? When I think when we went to the Dominican Republic once, and they were playing these really cool instruments that were fashioned out of everyday things. Like mm-hmm. it was a box with some string on it, and then there was this other thing, and all put together, it was this orchestra that blew my mind. But when you look closely, I'm like, oh, that's a guitar.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's a maraca. Oh, that, but they just looked different.
Yeah.
But they're the same instruments. They're just slightly different based on what you have access to where you live.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how things get slightly changed because, okay, maybe I don't have access to soursop. So maybe I use something else that is indigenous to this, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe I can't get my hands on a mango. I don't know how you feel about mangoes in North America. As a West Indian, as a Barbadian, the mangoes that we get here in the supermarket are the ones that we would feed to the livestock. It's not the good mangoes. Like, that's what we're getting. That's what's being shipped to us. Like, my mother goes into the store and sees a mango and says, that is not a mango. Like, that is not. That's something you would feed the cows or you'd feed the
Sadly. Yes. When I go to India, I land in India, and the first thing I do is go hunt for mangoes.
I know. Oh, is it the same in India? In Barbados, you can be just walking out in the country and there's a full mango tree loaded with mangoes that the monkeys haven't got to yet. And you go with like a burlap bag and you just, you know, you're picking them up off the ground. You're pulling them like just an open field. And in the middle of a field is a massive mango tree full of mangoes. And you look around. Nobody's here. You are on the road by yourself. And you're like, is this even happening? Does anybody see that mango tree? And then you run over there and you fill up. And nobody cares. Like, it's understood that that's a totally okay thing to do.
See, and that you're taking something for your enjoyment out of appreciation. So it's given freely. Like, the tree just...
It's just there.
Yeah.
with all its mangoes going, please, these are heavy. Come and take some.
Yes, relieve me.
Yes. There's even some on the ground if you can't reach high to get them. And that's something I really love. So my final question to you in our podcast as we come up on the hour, tell me, we talked a little bit about the West and other places other than the West. What is the difference to you between wellness and well-being? Because I really feel like wellness has been capitalized and marketed and really focusing not necessarily on making you better, but making you believe that you need certain things to buy to be better. Whereas I feel like well-being is something that you can achieve very without a whole lot of money or without a whole lot of energy, that these are things that you can do, like taking a nap or drinking more water. Like, what does it mean to you? What's your take on that?
Thank you for clarifying that, because I mentioned to you that English is the fourth language I speak coherently. So, so it's good for me to know that that is where it's coming from. So yes, I believe in the yogic Ayurvedic philosophy that as a self-governing, sovereign human being, my wellness is in my hands. And all I need is this body and some good earth and food and a few loving connections to be well, to be in well-being. I don't need to buy a single thing to feel health in my body. When I look at the definition of health, swastha in Ayurveda, like we said, it is centered, it's stake in your ground, stake in the ground, deeply established and centered within yourself, with the ancestors on your back and your future generations looking at you. Equilibrium, samatva, equipoise within all the tissues of our body, within the mind, body, soul, within all the eliminative functions of the body, the fires in the body, the various agnis, the vayus in the body, the various movements, the structure of the body, the stability of the body. I don't need to swipe my credit card for that.
Truth. As my son would say, facts. Absolute facts. I appreciate that. I want to thank Salila for coming today and being on the Intentional Wellbeing Podcast. I hope you will check her out on her Instagram. Where can people find you? How can people connect with you? How can people access the wellness and the well-being you provide?
Thank you so much for having me, Dan. I would love to stay in touch. Connect with me on Instagram, salila.ayurveda, my name and Ayurveda. If you Google it, you will find a few things about me. Reach out, DM me. I love to hear from everybody. I find time to respond because this is my life now.
It's a connection too. That's how we connect. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being a part of the Intentional Wellbeing Podcast, for listening in with my excellent guests. I want to thank Salila one more time for being here. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a thumbs up and go to Apple Podcasts and rate us, share, and keep spreading the love. It's all about cultural appreciation, your stake in the ground, your stake in your own well-being. Thanks so much for joining us, everyone, and I will see you next time. Hello, everyone. I just want to thank you so very much for being part of my podcast community here and listening to the people I love to talk to and being part of the world that celebrates diversity, equity, and inclusion. Here on the Intentional Wellbeing Podcast, where we're going to dive into some deep topics. If you enjoyed this podcast, please go over to Apple Podcasts and rate it, give it a thumbs up, like it, share it, comment. It really helps this podcast out, and I want to platform folks who don't ordinarily get platformed and share the stories of so many of us in the world of wellness and well-being. I want to thank you so much. You can find this podcast anywhere where podcasts are broadcast, and you can always contact me through my Instagram pages at Diane Bondi Yoga Official, or you can shout out to me at Diane@DianeBondiYoga.com. Thanks so much for being part of my community, and I'll catch you next time.